Hey everybody, welcome to Athlete on Fire. I'm Scott Jones, your host, and Athlete on Fire is always about bridging the gap between athletes, the rest of the world, telling stories, telling my story. The world that I live in is pretty crazy, doing a lot of cool stuff in the way of training and coaching and entrepreneurial stuff. And it's been a while since we've been doing some stuff on Athlete on Fire. We're bringing it back. It never really went anywhere. We focus so much of our time on Becoming Ultra in that podcast. If you guys want to go check that out, we've been just sharing tons of good stories of amazing people, regular everyday people, just going out and doing these epic distances. And it's been such a fun journey for me to coach a lot of these athletes and these runners from all over the country and all over the world. So be sure to check that out. I got one of my favorite athletes on the show today, Ryan Atkins, who is probably best known for his OCR exploits, but he's an adventurer. Him and his wife travel all over the world and do some crazy stuff. And today we talk about this fat bike expedition he's doing for a really cool cause up in Canada. They'll be in polar bear country, riding over ice, over a lake, covering lots of distance. And we kind of go into logistics of that and the whys and all that good stuff. And something I'm going to be doing new on the show. You know, when I first started this thing, the first episode that I ever did was with my dad. And it was me and him just sitting in a room, seeing if I could interview people. So I interviewed my dad, and it was, you can go back and check it out. It's one of the episodes on the podcast. But I always thought that this would be kind of a legacy-sorial type of endeavor, doing a podcast. And I still believe that, and I believe in the power of audio. When my dad passed away a couple years ago, I was just soaking up every piece of audio and video I could find of him, his voice. And I think that's the thing that I miss more than anything is his voice. Like, you know, you're not going to get the embrace, the hug, and all that stuff ever again, but if you could just hear him a little bit. And this podcasting stuff really led to some really cool experiences. I remember a handful of times I just threw a mic on a table when I was visiting him back in West Virginia, and I would forget it was there after a while. He would forget, you know, the rest of my family would forget. We go back and listen to those things, and there's just some really cool interactions that took place. And yeah, I think, you know, when my kids are older and one of these days I'll be out of here, they'll be able to pull this up, and maybe my grandkids will be able to listen to me trying to figure out this world a little bit and how I see it through my eyes and how I interact with some amazing athletes and just people doing really cool stuff, as well as myself doing cool things. So I think it'll be inspiring for those guys. So every episode, I'm going to start off with talking to somebody, my family or friends, and just letting them know something. And today it's going to be Lauren. She's just, my wife, Lauren, just had her labrum on her hip repaired. And this woman is so tough. She's off the pain meds in 3 or 4 days. Most people use them until they're out. And she's still been taking care of the boys as much as she can so that I can work and support us financially. We're entrepreneurs. We don't get a salary from anybody. So we're not quite at the level that we would like to be, where we could just chill, you know, at 40 and 36 years old. But she's been keeping the energy up and staying positive and being great support for me. So just a big shout out to her for being tough. So Lauren, thank you so much for that. You know, there'll be plenty of more of these, talking to her on these. But hope you guys enjoy. All the intros will not be this long. I just wanted to catch up with you guys a little bit. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation with Ryan. He's always interesting and humble and very, very inspiring athlete. So enjoy the show. Until next time, thanks a lot. Hey everybody, here with Ryan Atkins. Ryan, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm great. Did I hear a cat? I think I heard a cat somewhere.
Yeah, there's a cat. There might be a cat from time to time.
I love the
2 cents.
I love these freaking these sound effects. I mean, the technology is so long where we can make cats just show up out of the
awesome. Yeah, exactly.
So, me and Ryan actually go back a little ways, just as far as like how long we've known each other. I can't even freaking remember what 4 or 5 years ago is. Right around when I started Athlete on Fire.
Something like that.
You and Lindsay were not married yet, I don't believe.
No.
And you were just getting started, I think, in a lot of the OCR type stuff. And we were able to hang out, work out, do some goofy stuff here in Colorado a couple times when you're coming through and do some hikes. And, I haven't seen you in a while. I get some stuff comes up in my newsfeed every once in a while, the stuff you're doing. And I'm like, yep, that's how you do it, man. That's how me and my wife were when we were first married. You know, we traveled the world and we try to be as adventurous as possible.
Yeah.
Before social media was really the thing it is now. But I love, I won't even say living vicariously. I just love seeing the unique stuff that you guys do. It's inspiring. I think you guys do inspire a lot of people. And, and I can tell that you're always looking for like a unique adventure. You're not just trying to do you're not just trying to like race every single weekend and do the same thing. You definitely have like a little ADD that I feel like that I kind of have as well. So I think that's kind of another cool thing. And something flashed up about my thing, this adventure that you guys are doing in James Bay. And yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but yeah, just catch, you know, like when we're doing these talks, I'd love to just be caught up like as a friend, like what the heck have you been doing, man? I know I'll name some things I've seen you do. I know you were in Nepal maybe last year or maybe a year or two ago.
Yeah. Well, early this year, actually.
Was that this year? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty cool. Lindsay was over in India, helping out an orphanage, and then she wanted to do some hiking afterwards. So I flew to Nepal and met her there with a buddy, and we hiked up Everest Base Camp and tracked around and checked it all out and did that for, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks or so. And that was a really wild experience. And we just kind of took it all in and saw the big mountains. And now we just want to go back and, you know, climb them.
Yeah. Like, what? How far does your interest go in mountaineering as far as like which mountains, which experiences are interesting to you? You know what I mean?
Man, I would love to climb an 8,000 meter peak. That'd be really cool. I love mountains and I love being in them and I love experiencing them. And that's like a big interest of mine and something that I want to, you know, work up and develop more skills towards, in the future. And, you know, hopefully, do some stuff like that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
There's so many big, cool mountains. I mean, in the US and Canada and, you know, all over the world, not just like the Himalayas, obviously. So, it was really cool to be there and to be surrounded by, you know, the most, the biggest mountain chain in the world. But like, also there's so many gnarly mountains to climb, like in the Canadian Rockies, and just all over. So, there's lots of opportunities to learn and grow as a, you know, mountain athlete, I guess you would.
How was that base camp for you, the elevation? Did you do pretty well with it?
Yeah, I felt pretty good. We went up pretty quick. You know, we were doing about 500 or 600 meters a day, no real rest days. And when we got up to above 5,000 meters, I know Lindsay had some headaches and stuff, and you know, I could definitely feel it, but I was okay. So Yeah.
Yes, it's so variable. I mean, living in Colorado, you know, I have friends and really good athletes that visit, and you know, being at 9,000, just doing that, you know, going for a walk one day might bother somebody, and then you know, the next 2 days they can go up 14,000, they're good to go. It's just such a variable thing.
Yeah, and it'll affect you differently, like one trip to the next too. It's, you know, it's crazy.
It is really hard to comprehend, just like an Everest, right? And any of the 8,000, what are there, 14? 8,000 meters peaks in the world, I think.
Yeah.
But just, you know, we go to 14ers all the time because they're in our backyard basically. And they don't affect me like they did when I first moved here, because, you know, the hydration and the fitness is different than it used to be. But just trying to imagine what the air feels like at freaking 27, 28,000 feet. I can't even get my head around it.
Yeah. It's crazy. I found I've climbed a bunch of 14ers and stuff, and like I found the difference being like in Nepal and up on the, you know, Tibetan plateau was like you're above, you know, 14, 15, 16,000 feet for like multiple days. It's not like climbing a 14er where you like get up there and you're like,
yeah,
okay, now we go down. You know, you spend maybe, you know, half an hour up there chilling out, having lunch, and then you go down. It's like, no, you're up there for 5 days or something. So it's definitely a very different like feeling physically, because you're just, the exposure is so much longer, I guess.
Does it feel like you're adapting better, or does it feel like you're getting worn down more?
I'd say a bit of both.
Sleep is tough, right? I mean,
you don't really hard time sleep sleeping as well, and like you end up like coughing a bunch and stuff like that, but you get adapted. And I think if you're smart about it and you take your time, that, you know, most people can handle, 5 or 6,000 meters without too much issue.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Like every time I bring somebody kind of new to high altitude stuff, it's not the fact that you can't handle, it's the fact that the stimulus, like the way it feels to breathe at altitude and to work is so different. And it's kind of similar. Like if you just got out of your chair right now and went for, you know, went and sprinted 400 meters as fast as you could, you'd be freaking dying. But if you went and pushed hard for 5 miles after about, you know, half mile, your body bases out and then you get used to that sensation. And I think getting used to the sensation of the breathlessness is the thing more than a lot of physiological things. It's just getting comfortable with being a little bit uncomfortable. you're not gonna be able to control it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I was reading, you know, Ed Vasturis.
Yeah.
I always say his name wrong. How do you say his name?
I don't know. Vasturis? I thought it was Vasturis.
Vasturis. I think it's Vasturis. right when I said it, I was like, that's not right. But it's such a brutal name to pronounce anyway. I was reading some book that he wrote, and he was talking about his summits to Everest without oxygen. I think he's done it like 7 or 8 times. And the one way he described the last like 200 meters was he would take a step and then he would breathe. He would take 15 breaths and then he would take a step and 15 breaths. And like,
yeah, it's crazy.
That kind of patience to me is crazy.
You're just like moving like a slug. You're just crawling your way up.
Did you, were you sadistic enough to like do burpees up in the Himalayas at all?
Oh, I don't know if I did burpees or not, but I did like at one point, cause we climbed some like smaller peaks. And I think, at one point we were at like 56 or 5,700 meters. And I was like, I'm just going to sprint the last 100 vertical meters, like as hard as I can go. And I did. And it was like such a bizarre experience. It felt like my whole body was just like on fire. First of all, you're breathing as hard as you can, but like I was like my whole body was like tingling, and it's like when you stop you can't, like you just aren't recovering, you're like still just like, breathing like so hard, like VO2 max beyond, but you're not coming down from it. And like I was like almost like rolling around up there.
Oh my
God. Like you can't even, like your body doesn't even like know what to do anymore. So that was interesting. That was definitely a new.
But you want to know though, like that.
Yeah,
it's crazy. You know, I have a friend who that gym I was telling you about. He had this crazy cough all summer and went to tons of doctors and anything. Long story short, he found out he had a sarcoma on his lung, and it was growing like rapidly. It was an aggressive sarcoma. But he couldn't, you know, it really affected how he could breathe. It wasn't lung cancer. They had to eventually remove the lung last week. He's doing really well. But you hear that and you hear people with like, you know, any kind of pulmonary disease or disorder and, you know, things that aren't, you know, people who have lung cancer who never smoked it a day in their life. Like that, those types of people who just got unlucky. And that's what it feels like to them. That amount of lactate on a day-to-day basis in their in their veins and their muscles just burning them out. And I kind of have that kind of weird curiosity too on like what that would feel like. You know, I haven't been to the Himalayas, but here in these mountains, like doing
you
know, jumping jacks and trying to burn yourself out, just to see what it feels like. And then relating to people that have to deal with that stuff on a regular basis. It's just crazy.
Yeah, totally.
I thought that was wild. So did anybody else sprint up with you?
No, I think I was the only one to do it. Only one stupid enough.
So you know that game we showed you, the speed disc with the frisbee?
Yeah. Yeah.
You should try to play that in the Himalayas. That'll be really fun. It'd be like, you don't keep score, you just wait to see who can survive
the game. Who lasts. Till the end.
Brutal.
Last one standing.
So you're one of the fittest dudes, probably, I think it's safe to say, in the world, but you know, I'll say that anyway. And that being said, you know that you want to do big mountains, but you talked about the experience of it. Like fitness is great. It's going to help people climb mountains, but not every really good mountaineer is the fittest person in the world. Like they're just experienced and they know what's going to come up. So where does the line cross for you when you're going to have enough experience to go do some of the really big stuff? and have it match your fitness to where you feel confident you can go for it.
Yeah, well, I think that's just, you know, finding partners who are willing to, like, go out in bigger mountains and go on, you know, trips or things like that, and have those experiences. Like, I think all the – I've gotten to the point where all, like, the rope management and physical climbing itself is you know, there. But right. In terms of on bigger, you know, alpine faces, that's the kind of, like, experience that I think I need to garner before I can start going there. And it's also hard for me because, like, I do a lot of racing, and that is, like, my – career, so it's hard to be like, oh, I'm gonna take like a month and go climb Denali or something, because like then I'll have to miss three races and the training, and you know, it kind of takes these big chunks out of, you know, my job. And right. So I've kind of got to balance and juggle the two currently, but yeah, I mean, like, baby steps and getting there, and I do what I can when I can, and yeah, hopefully one day I'll feel, you know, safe and confident enough to experience that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just climbing in general, whether you're just doing sports stuff or big time mountaineering, there's definitely an intimidation as far as learning curve.
Yeah,
it's probably not as hard as, you know, it's easier than most people think it is to get involved, but I think there is, for the high level stuff, just so much that you have to do to feel like you're being smart about it, you know, that especially when you get, you know, especially when you have loved ones and all that stuff, and you want to make sure that no stone is left unturned when you start planning for something big like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty wild. There's a lady at the gym. We have just so many cool members of this place. Our whole goal is to get people ready for the lifestyle here. So this one lady, she's a doctor for her career, and she's big time mountaineer. And she, in the last year, like actually this spring and summer, she summited Denali by herself and skied down.
Cool. Oh, wow.
And then she did Aconcagua by herself, like within 4 months of each other. And she's, you know, she got lucky with weather up in Denali.
Yeah.
Just really inspiring. But
yeah,
she's been putting the time in, man. She's figured out she knows everything there is to know, which is it's just pretty wild.
Yeah, I bet being a doctor would help too.
yeah, for sure. And just like the risk management on the mountain and, you know, keeping a clear head at altitude is tough for a lot of people, and just putting yourself in situations before you get there to know what the game plan is going to be.
Yeah, totally.
So that's crazy. So I know you did that. The whole Himalaya kind of puts us down into a rabbit hole. And then what else have you done? The Iceland thing was pretty cool. We can talk about that a little bit. Are there any adventures that were just really kind of
adventures?
Pop out?
Well, like, so last winter in February, we, me and two of the guys who are actually going to come along to the Duke's Bay bike ride, we skied across Algonquin Park, which was, it's a park in Ontario. And it's actually a really popular kind of summer destination for people, and they go up and they'll canoe and camp and stuff. But in the winter, it's like no one goes there. It's like totally desolate. So it was pretty cool. To go up there, and we skied across it, and it took, I think we were out for like 10 or 11 days, and it was February. So it was, you know, cold, and
oh wow,
we dragged all our stuff with us. And that was a really, really fun kind of trip. It's hard, and it was, long, and but yeah, we just had a lot of fun. So that was kind of part of the reason why we're doing this this bike ride, because we were like, okay, let's do something else. Like, we had a good time, so let's
Are these fellow athletes or just buddies, or
so yeah, everyone who's doing it used to be a pro athlete at some point, but I think I'm the only one who still is. But yeah, they're mostly all cyclists, all the guys going.
Oh, nice.
So the fat biking will be no problem.
That's so fun.
for everyone.
What's the terrain? Is this going to be marked? Is this actually, let's just back up a little bit. James Bay Descent. So February 2nd, you said, is when you guys take off?
Yeah, that's planned around first or the second. We're going to head up there.
Northern Ontario. I'm not even going to try to freaking pronounce these places. Actually, I am. Attawapiskat.
Yeah.
Attawapiskat. There's always that. Yeah, there's always that. And then into Nunavut.
Yeah.
Nunavut. Okay. And then down to Musoni. This is freaking crazy. Musoni. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, James Bay, Ontario. And did you guys come up with this route? Like, what's the, for this expedition, for this adventure, what's the genesis?
Yeah. So, I mean, the original kind of thought was it'd be really cool to ride on, they have these ice roads, which are what they use to bring a lot of these rural communities, you know, all their goods. And they're only open during the winter, so they, you know, they'll truck up all the all their consumables and all their goods during the winter months, so for the rest of the year. And we thought, oh, it'd be really cool to ride our bikes down this ice road. But then kind of from there, we also thought that, well, it'd be actually really cool as well to do part of the ride on James Bay, like on the water itself.
Oh, cool.
So, and then we thought it'd be cool to cross over into Nunavut as well, which is like one of the Canadian territories. So we're going to start, in Attawapiskat, which is just south of the, there's a polar bear, I think it's provincial or national park up there, right on the edge between James Bay and Hudson's Bay. So we're starting just south of that. So, I mean, the possibility of encountering polar bears is going to be very real for us up there. But we're going to start in Attawapiskat. We're going to go over to Akimiski Island, which is in Nunavut. And then from there, we're going to beeline it kind of south to Musoni. And so that's a few hundred miles on the ice of the bay. Then Musoni is kind of at the southern tip of the James Bay. And then, so we're going to hop on the ice road there and take that south the rest of the way. And we're basically going to ride that all the way to the, civilization, to, the furthest, I guess, north paved road where we're going to kind of end.
Okay.
Right end of it, yeah. Smooth Rock Falls is, the name of it, and that's right by Cochrane, Ontario. And that's to most people, that's Northern Ontario. That's up there. We'll be 500 miles further north from there.
Is our
launching off point.
I'm following along the maps here.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. It'll be pretty cool. I think a lot of people don't realize how big, Ontario is. It's crazy.
It goes so
far. It's massive. I was looking at the size of provinces and states and stuff the other day, and people say Texas is so big, and Texas is 600,000 square kilometers, and Ontario, which is I think the fourth biggest, third biggest territory or province, it's 1.1 million square kilometers. So basically double the size of Texas, and it's not even kind of on the radar up there, but so it's huge, and we're just kind of going down a little bit of it. But I think the really interesting part of the trip will be to see some of these Aboriginal communities up there, which we're gonna ride through. And so part of the trip will be, we're gonna raise funds for a thing called the Native Friendship Center, which kind of is there to help, the most marginalized group of individuals in the area. And it does a lot of really cool things. And it's just really positive from, if you need a hot meal or a bed, or you need some kind of community service or things like that. So they do a lot of positive things. And we thought, since we're going to be up there, it'd be nice to back to the community that will be traveling through.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's, but yeah.
Nice. Oh, you paused out for a second there, but I think you're back. But I think I got most of it. Yeah, talking about the Timmins Nature Center. Is that it? Or Native Friendship Native. Center?
Yeah, exactly.
So you said some of the marginalized communities. Are they kind of scattered throughout that region that you guys will be riding?
Yeah, so basically along the edge of James Bay and then down the ice road, there's a lot of kind of communities, and Aboriginal communities that are basically pretty rough. Like a lot of them are, you know, like third world conditions, and there just isn't any or much, you know, attention or help or really awareness of these communities and of these people. They just kind of go under the radar for the most part. And so I think going up there and experiencing them and seeing them will be really eye-opening. And yeah, it's like third world conditions. It's wow. It's crazy. It's crazy to think that there's something like that in, you know, in North America and Canada and in this like part of the world where we are so, you know, lucky and affluent and life is so relatively easy. And
yeah.
So I think that'll be, you know, cool and cool to see, interesting to see, and really hopefully we can, you know, raise some money for them and do a little bit of good.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, so you guys got the GoFundMe out. We'll definitely post it up so people can get involved a little bit. And, it, you know, it's one of those things, like, if you guys weren't riding and you didn't have a little bit of exposure on the socials, you know, $0 would get raised. So just anything helps on that.
Right.
Kind of stuff, for sure.
Yeah, you know? Totally. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about these freaking polar bears, man. These polar bears are stressing out a little bit because, you know, you're not a huge dude. You're not going to be a big meal for these guys. What about these other riders? Do they got a little more meat on their bones, I think? I think you need some strategy here.
A bunch of ex bike racers. No one's really
that big. A bunch of little skinny dudes.
Yeah.
There's gonna be some pissed off polar bears when they start eating on basically some chicken nuggets for dinner here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's strength in numbers. Now I don't know what it's like for polar bears, but I know that for grizzly and black bears, there's never been a reported attack on a group of four or more people. So, like, basically, if you're in a group, right away, bears are kind of like,
yeah, they know what wolves can do, and everything else in the pack. They're not going to be messing with you.
Yeah, and so the other thing is, we'll have a pretty big tent, like a big teepee style tent. So that should help as far as, you know, nighttime and stuff. But I guess we'll have to. I don't know if we're going to be bringing any guns or not for like protection. I know in some parts you need to have a guide to have a gun in polar bear country, and like we didn't have a guide with us just based on what we're doing. So we'll have to kind of figure that one out. But I mean, hopefully we don't see many, or definitely not any angry polar bears, but
here's the thing, though. You kind of want to see one if you're like most adventurous people,
right.
But you kind of do, but you kind of don't.
Yeah, totally.
But in numbers, the strength in numbers is just don't be the slowest. That's really the main strength.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And dude, I don't like. I've never seen a polar bear in the wild, but I mean, like I actually chased a black bear this year in a race. I was doing a race in Vermont, and I see this thing. I was actually winning, and it was like maybe a mile to go, and it was at a ski hill, and I'm kind of running on this double track. It's like gradual downhill, maybe a couple percent, and I see this black thing up ahead of me. I thought it was a garbage bag or something, and as I get closer, I realize it's a bear. So I start like yelling at it because I'm racing. I don't want to stop. And I can't really go off course because, like, then you'd get DQ'd. So I start just, like, yelling at this bear. And the bear starts running. And it's running, like, the same direction that I'm going. And it's in front of me. And I ran behind this bear for maybe, you know, 300-400 meters before it decided to take a right into the forest. But I was running like 5:30 mile pace, 5:30, 5:20 mile pace. So like moving pretty good. And this bear, he was just loafing. Like he was not even working at all, going the exact same pace as me. And it's like terrifying because he was going at like, he was going at like 40% capacity. And I'm going at, you know, like 90% capacity. And I'm just like, oh, wow. If this, if this thing turned on the gas, like, I don't care who you are, you would not stand a chance. Not even like, or like on a, same thing on a bike. Like you think on a bike, I'd be able to like, no. Like, it's insane.
It is insane.
How fast they are. They don't look like they're built for speed, but these, you know.
That much power, though.
They just cruise. Yeah, it's crazy.
There's a lot of black bears back in West Virginia, like where my family is, the black bears. And I mean, you're a freaking quick dude. I've seen them on mountain bikes before. I've seen them on hikes, but to be running in the same direction and going as fast, fast as most people can run for distance, and just seeing the guy kind of loafing around, keeping up with him.
Yeah. He was like, it was no big deal for him.
Yeah, I mean, with polar bear, I would have zero concern with polar bears. I think the only concern I would have is hopefully you can get a picture of one. I think it'd be really cool.
That would be cool.
Because you don't want to mess up, you know, their search for food, or you know, mess up their living situation as well. Because I'm sure they have it pretty rough anyway in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, what, I think that where we'll be, it'll be a bit more. You know, the ice should be pretty much closed off, and I think polar bears need to have, you know, access to water to, you know, hunt for seals and stuff.
Yeah.
So that maybe they hopefully won't be traveling where we are as much. They'll be a little further north. So
yeah,
that'd be good.
What's the total distance from the starting to the finish area?
I think it's just under 400 miles, like 370 miles or something like that.
Are you guys planning on just having good hard pack the whole time, or, you know, what's the?
Like once we get to the ice road, it should be pretty good. Being out in the bay, it will be a bit more variable, but there's a massive, it's really open there. Like you're above tree line. So there's just, there's no windbreak. So there's not really much accumulation of snow.
Right.
So unless we happen to get like a big dump of snow on like a windless day, we should have, you know, pretty good conditions. And we're all gonna have like studded tires, but we're running 4.6 inch, you know, fat bike tires, so even if there is some snow, we'll be able to kind of get through it.
Nice. What's the how long do you think it'll take, just out of curiosity there?
We're thinking, you know, 7 to 10 days is kind of the idea.
Just keep some room for variables.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, leave some wiggle room. And we'll probably take food for, you know, 10 or 12 days. But yeah, a little bit of wiggle room is always nice. We did the same thing when we there to eat, because you don't know if you're going to get holed up in a storm or whatever. So, yeah.
How do you guys get to the start? Is there a road or...
Yeah, so we can actually drive a road around. The road's only open in the winter, but that's how we're going to get there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, I'd done this before I met you. Me and my wife and brother-in-law and sister and a couple other friends, we bought a 15-passenger van for like $1,800. It's about 9 years ago. And we drove it up to Denali and Anchorage. Cool. And we did the whole Canadian Rockies by driving. We did a bunch of backcountry stuff on the way up there, and grizzlies were definitely on the mind every day. I mean, we would go hike in one day, like for a night, 4 miles back, set up camp, hike out the next, you know, late morning, and there'd be grizzly scat like a quarter mile from our camp. It's like, oh my god, like, it's just nuts how prevalent. Yeah, and the crazy thing with snow is you can see everything. Like,
yeah,
all the cats that are in Colorado go out after snow. You'll see cat tracks everywhere. It freaks you out.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Totally.
What's Lindsay think? Is she excited for this for you? Or?
Yeah, she's excited. She might come up and kind of see us off and maybe like ride the first day with us for part of it, take some photos, or she might not. I don't know. cool.
Of course, she might not. No, I love it, man. I love the fact that it's unique. Did you see the guy that just did the Antarctica? Yeah.
Yeah. So cool.
That's freaking nuts, man.
Yeah, that would be that's next level.
that's crazy next level. I mean, oh my, who's the guy? Is it Shackleton? I can't remember the dude who went across. That's not Shackleton. That's old days. Anyway, the guy who went across Antarctica back in the day. That's long considered like the biggest athletic accomplishment ever. Right. And this guy just basically did it. 920 miles or something like that. Just nuts.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because, like, well, something I was thinking about was because they say it's the first solo crossing
right.
of Antarctica, right? But it's like with today's technology, like, he's obviously extremely connected, plugged right. in. I'm sure he could, you know, talk to his wife or girlfriend every night, and he's doing I think he did like social media update like basically every day. And so, like, is that solo? Like, where does the line between solo and not solo exist? Because you when you're that connected, it's like it's almost like having people with you. Yeah,
you can't compare. I completely agree that, I mean, you've done, you know, enough endurance stuff. You know, I think a lot of people listening have done enough endurance stuff to know that it's not the physical part that's a freaking bitch out there. It's what your brain is telling you.
Yeah.
And if you have a way to connect and have people build you up when you know that it's really hard.
Yeah.
I think that's a variable that is, I think people will understand it, but I don't know if I would call it solo, you know, physically solo. Maybe there needs to be another designation in this day and age.
Yeah. Connected.
Physically or completely unconnected, because that's where the world is. It's pretty wild.
Because I can guarantee that doing, you know, what he did without any connection would be, you know, and without any like spot device or any rescue device would be, you know, just mentally so much harder.
Oh my gosh. And people did that back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, even if you allow the GPS technology to give people peace of mind as far as knowing they're on track and they're not going to necessarily have to die for a physical effort, but you take away all of the interpersonal connection, I still think it's a completely different ball game.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's been
not to like take away from, you know, anyone's accomplishment. I just think it's interesting to think about things like that and think about, like, probably I bet no one, like, at this stage, no one will probably ever do a solo unconnected crossing, because, you know, why would you? We are just in an era that is so connected and so plugged in. But it is definitely different.
Well, and the research is there now on how important the mind is for endurance. It's not like we're just guessing that mental toughness is important and how you think about what you're doing is important. I mean, the research is there. Yeah, because in the tagline I'm looking at right now, I think it was off your page, it's a 33-year-old man. American man has become the first person to cross Antarctica alone and unassisted. And the unassisted thing could be taking the life.
Right.
And I'm the last person to say this isn't awesome, but I think, like you said, like thinking about how things are done now, it's just different. It's a different world for sure. Even when you say, like, I met a guy that we went and floated the Grand Canyon in the summer, and then we hiked out, and the guy who was there, he had circumnavigated the rim. The Grand Canyon.
Okay. Wow.
It's like 600 miles. It's something crazy. They just hiked it or whatever, but they were really specific about what they considered unassisted or self-supported. So, you know how a lot of these guys would go and plant their supplies. They'll go bury them.
Yeah.
So they did that. They went and took a week and a half and buried all of their supplies. But then we were just giving them crap. We're like, well, yeah, but still.
Yeah.
You weren't foraging, you know?
No.
You drove a vehicle to drop those, because people want to get so specific with this stuff. I think if you're going to go do it for yourself, and who cares? I think all these efforts are pretty sweet, really.
Yeah, totally. It's and what you get out of it. It's not like, you know, it has to be for a personal reason at the end of the day.
I mean, some people, you know, 5 miles for somebody is going to be very similar to what your James Bay adventure is. It just is.
Yeah, totally.
And that's the beauty of moving. I think it's the thing I think about all the time, Ryan, is like, we're so comfortable right now. You kind of mentioned this with, you know, it's crazy to have a third world feel in North America because we're so comfortable right now that we actually have to find ways to be physically miserable to get some value out of certain things in life, which is, I think it's
a, absolutely,
it's a blessing, but it's like, man, we're set up pretty good right now.
It's yeah, it is. It is crazy. We have to like put ourselves through these, you know, self or these experiences that we often, you know, pay for in order to feel, you know, whether it's feel alive or feel challenged or feel, you know, whatever it is we may feel. But I also think it's kind of funny how like people's, and this is like somewhat related, but people's like perception on food. Like someone will say like, or like people who are foodies or people who are like restaurant critics, and they say, you know, this restaurant has the best burger or the best, you know, whatever it might be. It's the, you know, an incredible meal. It's, you know, 10 stars or whatever. But like to me, the best meal I ever have is when I'm like, you know, finished a you know, week long adventure and I've been in the bush eating freeze dried meals for a week, and like you could literally put anything in front of me and it would taste like, it would taste better than, you know, to me it would taste better than like any, you know, freaking $500 meal that you could at three Michelin stars that you could ever come up with. And so like there's like this whole other aspect of and people who don't do those things or don't ever bong or ever, you know, run out of food or ever like have to get really hungry for a bit, they'll never experience that, because like you're only ever a couple hours away from your next meal, and your next meal is, you know,
it's crazy,
you know, convenient thing that you've gotten. So it's it's like something I kind of have thought about before, and you know how hunger is the best seasoning, I guess.
No, it's true. It's crazy. It's like, I mean, really, especially if you've been out in the woods for a while, I think if it's hot, it's pretty much going to be the best, it's going to be pretty much the best thing you've ever tasted. But it is wild because, you know, like for the traditional, you know, fancy restaurant stuff, they're over seasoning, over fattening, over salting, all the stuff, because they have to combat a palate that isn't used to being hungry ever.
And, totally.
That's a completely interesting thing. That's why, I think that's why so many different, types of, you know, ethnic foods are more popular now than ever, because the flavors are so unique and people have, they need something new because palate is just burned out, I think, a little bit. Yeah. It's interesting. I like that conversation for sure. It's well, I mean, just how do you, you know, and the reason that these podcasts work well on Athlete on Fire is because I talk to a lot of endurance athletes, and a lot of endurance athletes have a junk load of time to think about what they think about.
Think about random things.
So you've thought about food a lot when you're out there doing something. I know I have. And sometimes it doesn't even take more than a 7 or 8 hour day to get there, you know?
Oh, totally.
It's pretty wild. All right, so just a couple other things. This is awesome, Ryan. Just awesome catching up, man. OCR stuff, awesome. I'm not going to ask you all the 8 million questions that you answer a million times because it gets boring for both of us. the one thing that take OCR out of the picture, I believe you win the OCR male athlete again this year?
Yeah, I did.
Congrats. That's freaking awesome.
Thanks.
I love seeing you with your big old giant checks. That's pretty sweet. I love seeing people going through the airports with those things. It freaking cracks me up.
Yeah.
So that's always awesome. What was it going? Oh, for training. So, you know, you've been doing this for quite a while now, at least 4 years, I think, since we met. From a training standpoint, for people, when they, you know, they kind of see the end product of you winning races and doing all this cool shit. So what was the, what has changed from how you see yourself as an athlete and, you know, how you get out there and try to stay healthy over big, long seasons? Because I know in most endurance sports, there's so many good athletes, but it's really about who gets to the race the healthiest and feeling mentally confident. So have you come to any big realizations? Are there any things that you do specifically now that you didn't before? Maybe things that people can take with them?
Yeah. I mean, lots of things. I'm constantly tweaking. And like you said, have a lot of time to think about things like that. But I think one of the take home kind of messages that I realized was that, like, you have certain workouts that you have to do because they're super beneficial and they really suck. And those will be like, you know, probably super hard interval sessions or, you know, repeats on at the track or on, you know, flat roads of 400 meters or 1 kilometer repeats or whatever. Just like workouts that are just not fun. Like, they're just kind of boring, but you kind of have to do them because they do have a, you know, a good return on investment. And so for me, it's like balancing the mental energy, because most of the time I love getting outside and I love training and I love running and climbing and biking and skiing and doing all these things and moving outside. I love racing as well, but some of the really boring workouts just suck. So it's like balancing that, that mental energy of doing those really boring or really tough or really awful workouts and doing all the things that you love.
Oh, I'm losing you. I'm losing you for a second. Say that again.
I was just saying, kind of, you know, mental energy you're going to want to give to something, whether it be a really brutal strength session or interval session or running on a treadmill because you have to, because you're, you know, traveling or something like that. So yeah, like, I think the more you do it and the longer you do it, you come to the realization that you only have so much. Okay, today's going to be really hard, so let's make it count. And making those days count, and then really focusing on enjoying the other days and making, you know, maybe today the enjoyment, like the focus of today's training will be on, you know, spending time with a friend and doing, you know, an easy bike ride or doing something like that, you know. So
yeah, just realizing that you can't put max effort out every single day and not burn out.
Yeah, you can't put max effort out, and you can't put max effort into something that you don't like absolutely love. Like,
right.
I could go out and, you know, hammer up a mountain 7 days a week and put in some pretty hard efforts, but I couldn't go out and run on a flat piece of pavement, you know, 7 days a week as hard as I could. So managing those well of pushing, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's like, you know, we do a lot of high intensity efforts, you know, with my clients who do at the gym that I'm at right now, you know, the virtual clients that we work with, those have got to be a part of it. They, you know, the uncomfortable parts that you're going to see the adaptation, but you definitely, you kind of have to earn the days that are really fun, and you kind of have to, psych yourself up for the days that you don't want. But when you psych yourself up enough for the days that you don't want, then that behavioral change takes hold a little bit, and then you get better at it. Like, it's not always like just such a slog to go to a track and run 400s or repeat.
No, totally not.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, I say that and I'm like, I do like hammering, and a lot of the time I am stoked to just push. But you know, as an athlete and as someone who like does it every day, there are days when it's just like, oh man, I really don't want to do this today. So those days happen, and knowing that, you know, you have to do it, or and getting her done, and knowing that maybe tomorrow it's going to be a more focus on fun, makes it a bit easier.
Sweet, man. Well, I gotta get rolling here in a second. Awesome chat. Can't wait to see how this
good to catch up, man.
Yeah, seriously, dude. It's been too long. I want to catch up after your ride up there. Are you going to be in this part of the country at all anytime this year?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Colorado in March, I think.
March? Oh, sweet. Sweet. Yeah, we'll have to catch up, man.
Sweet. Sounds good.
We'll do a live show. That'd be fun.
Awesome.
Cool. Awesome, man. Hope you guys enjoyed Ryan Atkins. Go check out, let me get this GoFundMe right before I mess anything up here. It's GoFundMe, James Bay Descent, Timmins Native Friendship Center. That's the easiest way to search it. Or if you are following Ryan on the socials, I'm pretty sure he's going to share it a couple more times. So be sure to check that out. If you guys don't know much about Ryan and you want to learn more, go to a couple of our other conversations. Just search it in the Athlete on Fire. We had some good conversations when he was just getting started, and talked a little bit more about the training piece. So you can learn that. He's all over the place on the podcast circuit as well. So you can check all that stuff out as well. But thanks a lot for listening, guys. Appreciate it.
Dude, take care, everybody.
Hey, everybody. What do you think? Did you like the show? What about that adventure, man? I mean, might get a little chilly up there. Hopefully Ryan does not get eaten by a polar bear. I seriously doubt he will. But good cause, all that stuff. If you guys like what you heard, send us a message. Scott@athleteonfire.com. Would love to hear what you thought about it. Or if you have some more time, you know, like 3 minutes, you can go over to iTunes, give us a little review. We'd love to hear from you in that way as well. Thanks a lot, guys.